Welcome to the 94th episode of Does Your Favorite Movie Suck? Where we revisit great movies from the 80s and 90s that actually might suck. My name's Kaylin Egan.
My name's Travis Santel.
That guy is named...
Fletcher.
Tucker.
Yeah!
Solid.
Haven't had him on here before, and the first thing I want to say, Fletcher, is to remark upon how kind you are for not saying anything about Travis's dumb fucking hat that he is wearing only to irritate me.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, I was going to wait until we were on mics.
I was curious.
He's got a instinct for radio and podcasting.
I was just wondering if he was always wearing the hat.
I dressed like a golfer hat today.
He keeps calling it a golfer, but that's not what
no,
I see.
No, the whole outfit is a golfer outfit.
Do you see golfer when you look at this guy? That's not what I would call this.
Like if you saw a guy on the links.
No, don't do
well,
golf.
Well, yeah,
position.
I mean, if you're holding a golf club, you look like a golfer.
He mimed golfing.
Closed.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, it's cool. The point is, it's a cool outfit. You know what's great about radio podcasting is describing outfits.
Talking about
it's better
stuff.
Because people can imagine, and yet they will not come even anywhere near how uncomfortable it makes me to be in the same room as you.
It really, I wore this intentionally. I actually brought a different hat. I'm going to the thing after this. I brought a different hat to change into. I just wore this today for Kaylin because I thought it would agitate him. And boy,
how many times
I
do you typically change your hat during the day?
Well, normally none. But if I wear something to agitate Kaylin and want to look normal later.
This was a day where we had a very important piece of work to do.
Yeah.
Sometimes
often,
wears
I'm a hat wearer.
We had a very important piece of work to do and deliver before we recorded this episode, which we did.
Good.
But I am going to guarantee you that it is worse because Travis is wearing that hat. And my work ethic plummeted.
I will guarantee
I was
you.
Not interested in collaborating.
My life was
I just
better,
wanted to get it out so that I could stop being around it.
But it was a deadline-oriented project, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So it sounds like
a self-imposed deadline.
Yeah.
The hat helped.
Well, it didn't help the work, but it did get we did hit the deadline.
Why are you wearing a hat? In protest?
Kaylin always wears
that. My hair was kind of messy.
I just want to say...
Inside, though.
Aside from all this, I will say that I am heartened by the fact that I know Kaylin so well to sort of predict accurately what his response to this wardrobe choice would be.
It's more important to you that you frustrate me on an internal level.
Just to know that I could.
Just then get or then do good work.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I think.
Well, yeah, if I was had to rank things, yes.
Fletcher, I am so happy you are here. It has been a very long time that we've talked about having you on. And once again, we waited until almost the end of this entire show, or
it's going to go on.
to have you on, but I'm very glad we did. There's a lot of fun things to talk about with you, just in life and and movies and stuff.
I think that's true.
But why don't you tell us what you want us to know about yourself?
And by us, he means everyone listening.
Yeah. Everyone listening? Just about me?
Yeah, I guess. Who are you?
What's your deal?
Just a guy trying to make his way in this crazy mixed up
world,
Kaylin. I don't know. I'm kind of rattled by coming so fast into podcast world here.
After
being on many different roads in this area, I witnessed a car accident today. I had a very Los Angeles experience.
Really?
Craigslist picked up some furniture. Immediately, car accident witness right afterwards. It was full on like
high
LA
velocity
world.
Or like gentle tapping.
It seemed gentle, but then the car was in ruins. It was very strange. I don't know if the car was made out of spun sugar or what we're dealing with here. It's I don't
casualties?
Know insurance fraud. No, just anger. Just so much anger.
Oh,
it was billowing.
Yeah. Dignity
steaming.
Was the casualty today.
Yeah.
Well,
I guess lifetime casualty. But anyway, about myself, I wear many hats.
Ironically.
But none right now.
the only
person not wearing a hat, actually.
I'm an artist, musician. I have a record label. It's called Gnome Life Records.
But more than that, I mean, I can speak
many different things
to that a little bit, which is that Fletcher is an extraordinary musician and has been since I met him in the year 2001 at University of California, Santa Cruz, where we were thrust together as freshman year roommates.
This is your freshman year roommate?
Yeah.
I never knew that.
You didn't know that?
Will you please tell us one freshman Kaylin Egan story?
We used to wake each other up in the middle of the night by doing strange things and then going, you know I do that. I do that. It's something that I do. And I don't know how we arrived at that.
Oh, yeah.
But we arrived at it very quickly.
Well,
that was like
it was
week
very...
two.
It could have been
something.
Day one. I mean, I remember like what, the cool thing about the cool thing about me and Fletcher is that we're pretty cool. I still remember. It's like there are funny memories are funny because I remember vividly the where I was, the like my body posture, and the sound of your voice on the phone when we did a fresh like a pre-college phone call. To like be like, hey, I guess we better call.
Who's bringing the refrigerator?
Yeah, well, not logistical, just to know who each other was, and it was great. And we both,
and
we
it was
both
still phone. It was still like a phone.
It was
call
a landline.
World.
I had a landline phone.
I had a landline
I did
too. I didn't have a cell phone actually.
Yeah, at that and point. We bonded over John Lennon's solo work
on the first phone call.
On the first phone call.
Oh, that's a good
How did it come up?
I think I said like Fletcher said something maybe about. Maybe he didn't, but he maybe said something about the Beatles or something, and then and I was like, "Oh, I'm really into John Lennon's solo work," and he was like, "Oh, funny you say that. Me too.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. I have them all. Yeah. I have multiple vinyl copies of several of those.
I like both of you now, but I'm suspicious of this call now.
It was great. Fletcher told me that he later told me that he was pretty sure I would be black based on my name, and he was disappointed when I was not.
Yeah, I feel the same way about you every day.
Well, I just didn't. I don't come from a town of much diversity, and I was looking forward to broadening my horizons.
Totally.
I had no intention of airing this on the podcast, but on the way over here, I was like, Kaelin, can you describe Fletcher in three words? Mm-hmm. Just give me three words. He goes, maybe like, I don't know, three words. He goes, normal, cool guy.
Normal.
And I was like, okay. And he said, I don't want you to use this against
me
on the podcast.
Yeah, you're eliminating all the context for this.
But
he
I
was
think
like,
it's
hey,
important
could you describe
it's...
Fletcher in three words? Like, that's a normal thing to ask me.
It's
and then I was like,
me.
This is a fucking setup.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So then I said, totally, normal, cool guy.
Normal,
and
yeah.
And I was like, try to use that against me, you piece of shit. And
I
did,
wasn't...
and it failed.
Well, no, I'm... Oh, God, I really
Take
feel...
off your
this
hat.
This hat has really turned our relationship today. He thinks everything's a put-up and everything's an attack. And I really just wanted to know.
We're here today. Hey, there's a guy I know named Dallas. Come on in, buddy.
I'm curious who listens to this podcast other than Dallas in the future and
thank you. Well, that means you've heard it. That's good.
Well, you're asking the wrong person.
Okay.
No, we had a nice correspondence with a listener just today, in fact.
Oh, good.
We have a nice little loyal group of people that listen to us.
Yeah.
Our numbers steadily rise.
I just thought of something strange about Kaelin from college that
Please.
Probably doesn't do anymore. He used to write medley songs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Compiling, like, snippets of other popular songs from not really the era we were in, but...
Well, we were in 2001, and that was of the 90s for sure. It was like, I remember doing a 90s medley.
Like, what do you mean?
It was just like looking for, I can't remember really right now, but it was like looking for good points of, to like turn from
transition
one song.
To,
yeah, transition
oh,
from
I
one
get
into
it.
Another.
Like
yeah.
Overlap lyrics.
Yeah.
So you could...
No, yeah. So it'd be like it, all of a sudden you're listening to Third Eye Blind, which I was just singing only today. And then you've transitioned right into
a
little
if you
Henry Harvey today. Danger.
Oh, I see.
And then you take a break until you go, it's been 1 week.
See, that's the one I remember.
Yeah.
That's actually the transition I remember.
Uh-huh. It's the most
It's all about timing. It's all the timing.
Yeah.
We are here, though, and we'll continue to reminisce
Not
about
sure.
college.
I'll just say, if you guys think that our work day sounds awesome, you're right.
Yeah, that was the
every
deadline
day.
That we were racing. Yeah. A medley of 90s music. We are going to watch Gremlins, and I'm very excited. Fletcher, so basically,
never heard of it.
The other thing that we need to talk about with Fletcher is that he, like me, is going to have a baby soon.
Baby.
And,
it's and
gonna,
like you, a girl.
And
well.
A girl, a little girl.
Yeah.
And Fletcher's baby is due a month or so before mine, and so there is a very real potential that while we're recording this show or watching this movie, his wife goes right into labor.
Yeah, we're at 38 weeks, so that's in the sweet spot.
Viable baby. That's a viable baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And everything.
I don't know why I raised that other than the fact that we were talking
drama.
About birth. And,
drama.
But I was at his... Oh, this is why. I was at just at Fletcher's baby shower a couple of week or two ago.
True.
And he was like, hey, you know, I'm close enough... And if I'm ever going to be on this show, we got to do it probably before this baby shows up.
Yeah.
And so I was like, let's do it right now.
Yeah.
Right. And it happened to be Gremlins. And I think it's a nice pick. I think it's a good, solid crowd pleaser of a pick. Mm. I think it's going to be a very fun episode, a great movie to watch. But I would like to know, first and foremost, what your feelings are about that movie in general.
I have memories around the movie, but not of the movie. Elementary school, and I, by the way, usually it's a surprise, but it seems like I got a little advance notice on Gremlins.
Did you tell him?
I told you.
Yeah. Is that a?
I told
it's
him.
A big faux pas. But go
well,
on
I just told because he was gonna have to come a long way. I was like, "Do you want to do this?" And...
But no research or anything. Don't worry. No. I don't know anything.
All right. Cool.
But
Save.
It did give me a second to think. And that I had a, my...
Some might argue that would be a better approach for our guests.
Like, not let this them have podcast.
A little thinking, maybe.
Yeah.
It's worked out fine so far. One of my...
Oh, Dallas, you just knocked over the mic.
I'm sorry.
Okay, can you pick it up, please? Yeah. You are very dirty. What have you been doing?
Is it still recording?
I work outside.
You're working outside?
Yeah.
Yeah? And what are you doing now? Just want to hear the show?
No.
Do you want to have anything to say to people?
No.
All right, then just shut up. Okay, yep, go ahead.
Important parenting tips.
time capsule for his own son. Just go on.
Just tell him to shut up when you want him to.
It's perfect.
I had a one of my closest friends in elementary school, Gates, Christopher Gates. Mm-hmm. He was obsessed with Gremlins.
Oh,
obsessed.
Yeah.
And that's cool. Kindergarten... He was like really close friend in kindergarten and first, second-ish grade. Kindergarten, Dallas heard. Is he going to kindergarten? Have fun in kindergarten, Dallas.
Have a good time.
Anyway, he was obsessed with it, and I was too scared to watch it.
Oh, interesting.
Even without watching it,
you were
too scared.
Based on what I heard, what he told me about it.
Wow.
And similar to you, Travis. Huh? And so this is for me, this is very interesting just to be in this room because I have listened to all of these podcasts.
Unlike Kaylin's wife.
Unlike Kaylin's wife, yeah. I'm a better wife to Kaylin, I think, in a lot of ways.
You've been with him longer.
Kind of a first wife.
Yeah, really is first wife. I mean, we slept together first.
A lot.
Certainly.
A lot. Often.
Developed from there.
Yeah. I know a lot about you from the podcast, but I've probably been in the same room with you 5 times.
Tops.
Probably, yeah. So anyway, similar to you, I had a very restricted media diet as
Tell
a child.
Tell me everything about this.
I was not allowed to watch almost anything.
Huh.
We had, I don't know what you call it now, terrestrial TV. Mm-hmm. What, is that what it's called? Well, you don't have cable.
Yeah. Satellite.
And we
antenna
TV. Antenna TV. Yeah. And so amongst the television channels that we could get on a... antenna, what we were allowed to watch was PBS.
Mm.
And that was it.
Can you tell me quickly, I don't know if this, I'm belaboring this, but I really am curious.
Yeah.
What are the professions of your parents, and what was the ostensible reason for restricting your media diet?
Well, my dad's done a bunch of different things. Most of my childhood, he sold real estate.
Okay.
But he owned his own skate shop for a little while, and he worked at banks for a while. It's a lot of different stuff. My mom was a landscape architect, but she mostly stopped doing that to raise us.
Interesting. I ask. I don't want to cut this off.
Sure.
It's
not particularly interesting.
No, I am. To me, it's very interesting.
Well, landscape architecture is pretty interesting.
I've often wondered. So my mom's a developmental psychologist. But also she's a huge science fiction fan. Mm. And sort of I mentioned this on the podcast before, but it bears repeating because it is my experience with Gremlins also, that I had nightmares. I was going to a therapist because my parents had gotten divorced when I was 4, and the therapist is like, he's having massive nightmares all the time. Mm. And then after 3 months or 6 months of therapy, he calls my mom in and says, "Hey, are you showing him Doctor Who before he goes to bed?"
Oh, how funny.
She goes, "Yeah." And he goes, "Don't do that." And she stopped and the nightmares went away. So I've always wondered, was it that sci-fi Doctor Who transgression that made her pull back from some of the more violent things, or just good developmental theory for children to not let them be exposed
right.
to that?
Right. I mean, I could watch Doctor Who because that was played on PBS, but it was too boring for me as a child because the early ones are real slow.
Sure.
I like them now.
But what was the reason that you think your parents...
The reason, I think, was this, that they felt like it was a more wholesome childhood to be... Well, for one thing, just not be watching screens much. I mean, it was pre-computers,
wow.
of course, but just like a limited amount of, If you're bored, go outside. I mean, that's kind of what my childhood was like. Or
Kaylin's was, if you're bored, go watch Pet Cemetery or...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he couldn't be Mark Divergent.
Yeah.
But But for that reason, so basically I watched nature documentaries and British comedies. Amazing. And that's and that kind of installed the software that still is functioning to this day.
Yeah.
Totally. Which I'm grateful for, because I mean, I don't know, I'm pretty content with who I am.
That reminds me, by the way, I just wanted to say, because I somehow derailed myself earlier, I was going to say Fletcher's an incredible musician with incredible records, and if you order his music off Gnome Life, I'm sure he would appreciate it, but you will also get a super treat. And he also put out what I'm going to call my favorite record in terms of just like what I listen to more than anything else, which is a repress of this Robbie Basho record called Visions of the Country, which is just so incredibly, incredibly great. It sounds amazing. It's beautiful, incredible music. And it is like, I cannot recommend it more strongly.
Oh, thank you.
That's cool. Still in print, right?
You can actually, it's a very natural plug, because the reason I'm here is I was at the record pressing plant in outside of Los Angeles picking up a anniversary edition of that LP.
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. So, did you know that, Kayla?
Nope.
Great time.
Yep. So it's the 40th anniversary of the original release of that album.
Oh,
so
my God.
I did a special edition.
It is nothing but a favor to yourself to buy that record and Fletcher's music, but that record is a real, real gem.
Yeah, thanks. It was he's a very important musician to me, so it was a great privilege to kind of contribute to his legacy.
Anyway, sorry. I just forgot that earlier.
So Gremlins. So what is your experience? You didn't see it first.
You've seen it now. You have seen it.
I believe I have seen it once. And I believe I saw it around that time period with a lot of trepidation. And so I have like some images of like what the creatures look like. I have no context at all for the story. I know for a fact it was too scary for me at the time. I mean, I think it was like first grade or something like that. But I watched it because Chris Gates loved it so much.
Right. Interesting.
And he would like draw pictures from the movie, and he'd make references to it, and I didn't understand any of it, and I was like, I was drawing pictures of Mario.
Yeah. I'm really glad. I am glad that we've put this in this context. And I was at first, my first instinct was to be offended that fucking Caps for Sale over here was slamming my childhood. But then
I don't even take offense to that. I think it's all very fair.
Upon reflection, I was like, this is great because
for sale or rent. Caps for sale.
Well, there's
or
a book
rent.
Called Caps for Sale, and it looks like that fucking guy.
I was
and so if anybody imagine the book Caps for Sale.
I'm actually
anybody
dressed
knows?
Like Andy Cap comic. That's the actual character I'm dressed as.
Oh, the abusive drunken husband.
Yeah,
that's
the golfer. But also a golfer famous.
Until this second put together that Andy Cap was a golfing joke. Literally. That is insane.
Anyway.
But I'm glad, upon reflection and upon sitting in my own rage, I realized it was a great idea.
Wow. You took that really hard. This cap really upsets you. Jesus
because
Christ.
Gremlins obviously.
Slam on his childhood.
That's
not new. That's every episode of this podcast.
Gremlins was more than almost any other movie controversial for its horror elements in a kid's film. I mean, this is another one of those Amblin movies, or these Spielberg produced movies, including like Temple of Doom and a couple of other things that were pushing.
Is it Spielberg?
Yeah.
And it's
the very first script Chris Columbus ever wrote, by the way, or at least the first one he ever sold. And of course, Joe Dante, who comes from Roger Corman, was putting this kind of heavy horror spin on it.
But this is just after Twilight Zone, right? Didn't he meet? I mean, I'm assuming he met Spielberg there. I think this is the year or 2 years after Twilight Zone, which we've done on this podcast.
Maybe it's right around there. Twilight Zone's 80, so this has to be a couple years.
Yeah,
after.
I was curious if there was a relationship, because I feel like that's the concept of a gremlin comes into popular culture.
Okay, I'll tell you everything.
I'll
tell you everything I know. No, Gremlins came from World War II, and Gremlins is a thing.
Popular culture.
Yeah, but I mean, even then, like Walt Disney was famously going to do this animated film called Gremlins.
Oh,
and,
really?
Like, it was going to be about gremlins fucking up planes and stuff. And then, yes, then the Twilight Zone
probably
came.
Probably would have used different language.
Yeah, probably. But
More pro-Nazi language.
Yeah,
probably.
I was going to say. Certainly. He probably would have used anti-Semitic language to describe that.
Spielberg saw The Howling, which Joe Dante did after doing a bunch of exploitation movies for Roger Corman, and gave him, I'm sure, probably off of that, bit in Twilight Zone. Mm-hmm. And then I think as Dante's career was sort of languishing or struggling to get going, he brought him in to do this movie Gremlins, which I think, I want to say like Chris Columbus had written as like a sample or something. not necessarily expecting it to be made or something. And Spielberg was like, no, I want to do this, and let's bring in Joe Dante, and then he reworked it. So there's a lot of interesting things to me about this, but mostly the memory in the culture, I think, is like, that's the movie, where like there's this really a violent scenes involving either gremlins attacking people or gremlins dying. And it's very aggressive. And two, there's this insane sequence where Phoebe Cates gives a speech about why she doesn't believe in Santa Claus. And so, like, what is all this doing?
I don't remember that at all.
So it's a
also
very
would have ruined my childhood.
A really, really weird movie. That is, I've always been a little bit, frankly, unsettled about Gremlins. Not because I'm against, you know, obviously I watched a lot of stuff when I was young that I probably shouldn't have, but it's more like, who's this movie for? And what is the responsibility to an audience? And I'm not calling the movie irresponsible, and I find it in my head like super dynamic and fun to watch because Joe Dante is such a dynamic and incredible filmmaker. But like, why did you make this?
Would
like,
you show this to Dallas?
No. Absolutely not. I totally would. Well, I mean, he's here, and he's not coming in here to watch this. He might like it, but it's twisted, man.
Just to be clear for listeners.
What's going on with my friend?
This is the thing. I don't want to leap into the camp of like, this either shouldn't have been made or you have to be careful about what you make for kids. I don't know that I believe that. And I haven't watched this movie really with that weighing on my head in my head since I've been a dad or whatever, but I'm interested to approach it exactly that way from the other side.
Trainspotting's okay for kids, we've learned, but this movie not okay. So that's the boundary in the Egan household. Just so we're
he has consciousness now.
Yeah,
it has scatological.
When you have when you have theory of mind, you can't watch it.
I think there's a lesson to be mined.
This I think was the first. This is the first movie I think in my at least that I recall that felt like a specifically transgressive film for me to watch.
Okay,
because I was not allowed to watch it.
How did you watch it then?
I watched it much later. I remember that I went. I think I saw it with my grandfather, which is a weird idea. But I think that I think that what happened was the movie came out in theaters. I was old enough to sort of. I want to say it's later. I want to say it's like 85, 83. So I don't know. I feel like
I don't think that's when it came out.
I feel like
it
I have a memory.
It might be like 83.
You want to check while I'm talking because I'm curious now about how old I was. But in my head, I had a memory of it being out. I had a memory of it, like, that's a movie that is around, that I sort of saw in the popular culture.
Yeah.
And I wasn't allowed to see it, even though I felt like it was for something like me or somewhere like me.
Yeah.
And then later... 84. Okay, so yeah, I would have been 5. So, okay. Like, that's quite possible, I suppose.
Yeah.
But I remember later, like, that became the movie that I had... The first movie I remember being told, you can't see that because it's too scary.
But
I wanted to see it.
Because the advertising was kind of
maybe. I don't know if they had a tie-in with some fast food restaurant. I don't know what the deal was back then. I have no idea.
Well, it's such a weird movie to say here's this really cute little gremlin and a little kid, and it's from Steven Spielberg, and then, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Goes Look dark. Out. Yeah, like, weird.
But I remember, I think my grandfather maybe didn't know. He's like, oh, that's a kid's movie. I'll watch this with him. I must have been 7 or 8, probably, I'm thinking. And I think we watched it together. And I remember being... pretty scared, but like I remember thinking I can handle that. That's okay for me.
Isn't the 80s? Aren't there some like more examples of sort of like bait and switch like that in the 80s of like kids-ish stuff getting creepy? Like, I mean, I don't know. I mean, Chucky is obviously too extreme of an example.
Oh no, totally. There is. I mean,
it's like what
the things that I feel that I was most traumatized by as a child were not adult films. They were kids' movies that went. Weird.
The Hug-a-Bunch movie.
Well, the Hug-a-Bunch is weird, but I don't think that would have scared me as a kid. But I've
heard the episode. I have not.
Trauma.
I felt like the episode was enough. I didn't need to watch. You're good.
But there is
the
this movie that I think we even have in the bag called The Peanut Butter Solution that totally distressed me. Because it was just like the rules seem off.
But
I think about that movie at least once a month.
Really?
Still. I do. Oh, we've never talked about it.
Maybe not.
But you did Brave Little Toaster, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean... I don't know. I mean, that's not a bait and switch, but that's a my childhood memory of that movie, it's been a long time since you guys did it, so I don't really remember what your take was on it, but I remember that being profoundly disturbing. Because it's about abandonment.
I know what you mean.
And it's like it's too harsh of a
There's odd adult emotions
for a small
going on.
Child.
Yeah.
The same was true with that dinosaur movie,
Land Before Time.
Sure. Like,
yeah, well, but yeah, I mean,
I don't know. It seems like those are brutal. Those are this. I know.
But this movie's
the
different because this
could give brutal messages to kids.
This movie,
Disney trafficked in that.
This movie is
Yes.
Is intentionally, and this is not a slam. I think it's an attribute of the art of this film, but it is intentionally sadistic. Oh. And there's something about watching a movie as a kid that turns mean that is really weird to me. And that's where Temple of Doom got in so much trouble. Because you're making an Indiana Jones movie, which admittedly Raiders has like all sorts of guns and dying and shit. But like this, Temple of Doom feels vicious. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what is going on here? Who makes a vicious kids movie? Right. And what's the thinking there? Now, I'm interested in this as just looking at Joe Dante's career, because he, to me, he's never been a guy who like had a cult, really. Like, he's always like, oh, we so respect Joe Dante or whatever. But he's not like John Carpenter, and he's not like Cronenberg or whoever else.
Say what some of his other movies are, so people don't have to Google while they
Oh,
drive.
Sure. Joe Dante did... Yeah. Later he did Matinee, but he did... Mostly he's known for Gremlins. He did Small Soldiers. He did Small Inner Soldiers, Space. He did a couple of other things. But the reason that I think that's an interesting question is, like, what did Joe Dante do? Is because he is the consummate work-for-hire guy.
He feels like a blue-collar creative with an aesthetic.
But he is so stylistic.
That's the thing, yeah.
That's what's so odd about his career.
I completely agree with you. I think when we're talking about Bill and Ted, you mentioned Joe Dante. I was like, I had the same thought, because it's that aesthetic that I've come to associate with him.
But he rarely builds things from the ground up, which is so
strange.
Yeah, it's
very weird to have a working-class, blue-collar, aesthetically recognizable guy.
Well,
it's...
and he is a guy who... He's like a film historian. He's one of those dudes who's like obsessed with the 50s and the creature films and the horror stuff, which makes sense that he got hooked up with Roger Corman. His one that I know of, like passion project, Matinee, is about... the you know, media mogul impresarios who would go to the theaters and like put buzzers in the seats and stuff. So it's like an ode to that era. And to me, he is somebody who almost like fell into the trap of feeling that there's more honor in like taking on a project than like building one. He's like, this is one of those movies that when we talk about Back to the Future, this reminds me of that in a little way, because it's like, what business has Gremlins to be a classic? It's fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little dumb stuffed animal that turns into monsters. Like, so what? But the whole reason this movie even exists in the memory is because of its cruelty and because Joe Dante is so insanely talented and just guns it in this movie.
Is it remembered for being cruel, or is it more of like a... Like, Short Circuit stays in the memory as the first entry of an anthropomorphized robot, I think, is part of its charm. Oh, I remember that idea. That's the first time I heard that idea. Is this the first time in popular culture for our generation where we had the very smart idea to have a childhood pet looking cutest thing in the world turns into a deadly thing?
Well, everything, Short Circuit included, comes from E.T. This is all E.T. fallout. Right. I mean, or maybe they may have actually done Gremlins before, because E.T. gets a shout out in this movie where there's on the marquee, it says A Boy's Life, which is the original title of E.T. Mm-hmm. But I think that all of these riffs on...
It's a terrible title.
Yeah, well, that's why they changed it. All these riffs on find a cute thing and then what happens next are coming from
the same... Yeah, but there's something pure about something that is... I guess it's E.T. too, but like the idea of the cutest possible pet. If memory serves me, this kid thinks like, oh, this is a pet now, right?
Sure.
Doesn't he buy it at a pet store or something?
Yeah, somebody, his dad gives it to him.
Right.
But isn't that isn't that a trope from like horror short stories? And I
think so.
Yeah,
and
I don't think this invents the idea. Yeah. But in terms of popular culture of our generation, when I think about that idea, I think of Gremlins first. And I don't know if it's the first entry, but it's certainly the most memorable. And I'm just trying to parse out: is it because all the things you're saying and cruelty, or is there also an addition of it being?
I mean,
the first
let's watch
entry?
And find out. But my money's on the shock effect of seeing this movie go sour and crazy. And it's fun. Cool. Don't get me wrong; it's not fun. But it is like, what the hell? Like, it's out of control, which is why I mentioned the Chris Columbus thing, is I think he wrote it essentially as a, like, look at me, pay attention to what I can do.
He must have been young.
Yeah, he was very insanely young. Wow. It was way before he was a director and, like, way before all that stuff. And before he wrote Goonies, which he probably got off of this film.
Before we did the movie musical Rent.
Yeah. When he kickstarted.
That old chestnut.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, he also, I was thinking of all these other weird movies he did, but I think it's notable in much like An American Werewolf in London, actually,
that
it was
America.
Written.
Hello. Hello.
Come here for your Chris Columbus hot take jokes, you guys.
So dumb.
Sorry, excuse me. I mean, exposed indigenous peoples to disease. That's actually what I mean.
His production company is 1492. Anyway, like that movie.
What a grotesque legacy to claim.
Like American Werewolf, I think that he was writing for the shock effect of reading a script that people would be like, well, you would never make this, but it's awesome.
Yeah,
and they made it. These movies, this is a time where they're making this fucking stuff.
Who did the creature effects for this?
I'm not sure. Interesting. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think it's one I never revisited. It's still attached to this sort of scent of transgression against my mother for me, I think, probably. So I never revisited it. I saw it once. Mm. I certainly remember certain scenes from it. Or I guess not scenes. I remember shots from this. Like, they're stuck in my brain.
I know the movie quite well, but I also remember before I ever saw it, similar to what you guys are saying, descriptions. I remember a description of putting a gremlin in a microwave and it exploding and me being like, what the?
Boy, do I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. I remember it well, too. But I remember someone telling me about that and being like, oh, my God, this movie sounds insane.
I for sure remember that.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Let's go watch it. Let's get horrified.
Okay. I'm nervous.
What is it?
No.
It's your new pet.
Come on, Barney. Be a good dog. You're kidding. Dad, it's really neat. Where did you get this?
Some little junk store in Chinatown.
Can I pick him up, Dad?
Sure, go ahead. Just be careful. You gotta be gentle.
I will.
I hope he's housebroken.
Oh, isn't it cute? Has it got a name, Dad?
Yeah, Mogwai.
What?
Mogwai. I don't know, it's some Chinese word. I just call him Gizmo. He seems to like it.
So, Fletcher, it's on you, buddy. Kick us off. How do you feel?
Your mic's not turned on, I feel like.
Oh. Hey, Fletcher.
Yeah.
We're back.
That's me.
Professionals.
Kick it off, man. How do you feel now that you've seen Gremlins?
Tired.
Yeah.
Depressed.
Depressed. All right, unpack it for me. Unpack depressed.
It's a really profoundly sad movie. Full of...
Yeah, that's right.
Full of ennui. It's like, it's an ennui fest.
Mm, interesting.
It's the way I received it.
Okay.
I think that's true, and I had a great time. I'm going to be the guy who defends this movie, I feel like, in this podcast. So I'm excited about it.
Well, I had a confusing time. I feel like I may be from a different culture than this culture was produced by.
I'm so glad that you said that, because I am one of the things I want to talk about, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about.
Oh boy, is there ever.
And there are so many angles to come at it from. But that one in particular, I described the movie at the beginning as kind of a mean film, or at least a sadistic one.
Yeah.
And I wonder one of the things that I now know I was feeling all along, every time I've seen this in the past, and I can now maybe start to articulate it better, is that it seems to kind of hate itself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something really fucking weird about...
In the world in general.
Yeah, but it's really weird where it situates its perspective on these people from Bailey's Corner, whatever the George Bailey's town is called. Mm-hmm. You know, and It's a Wonderful Life. And it's like, yeah, but what if those people were fucking assholes? Like, or like, not assholes, but like stupid.
The family's stupid.
And feeble and kind of pathetic.
The town is mostly assholes.
Yeah, and if all of their problems, all the problems that you're familiar with from Frank Capra movies were laughably, pathetically stupid.
Yeah.
And petty. It's like, what if that were the case? And then you put monsters in it who also hate them.
Right.
But they're mean and cruel and like...
I'm gonna hate themselves and each other too, monsters.
But also, they hate each other, but they're also so full of like this weird demonic joy that never quite resolves. Like there's something about them that they find amusing, and what is amusing is hating themselves and each other. They're titillated by it.
Their self-hating id
seems
to be what they are like. They're,
and is that, does the, do you think...
poorly puppeteered self-hating id.
Occasionally poorly puppeteered.
Well, sometimes
occasionally. Sometimes stop motion.
Yeah. Like, oh, like not a lot of stop motion.
Yeah. No, not a lot. Not a lot.
Oh my gosh. Every time they're not puppeted, they're stop motion.
Well, that's only like
six times, man.
No way. Yeah. It's only a couple times. There's only a couple shots, I think. There are a lot of shots where they speed up the puppeteering. Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah.
Which is stop motion E because they seem to drop frames in order to do
that's
it.
That's not stop motion.
Super weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know what. Here's the thing that I remembered while I was watching this film.
Yeah.
Joe Dante, his first kind of accomplishment, if you could call it that, was to in college, I think, or in film school or whatever.
This is not an accomplishment, so.
Well, I don't know. I mean, these emotions that I'm feeling are unique to this film.
That's true. I'm feeling,
this is a very unique.
I'm feeling
film.
Strong feelings. It's very unique. Yeah, yeah.
But he made this movie, this thing, 7.5 hours long. Called The Movie Orgy, and it was just a assembly of clips and scenes juxtaposed with other audio, and it's just a fucking indulgence in movies, but also kind of, it sounds to me like an abusive marathon experience. Uh-huh. And I was watching this movie, and it is, the film is so explicit with its references, mm-hmm. and it's constant, like you said, it's like, it shows like maybe 5 different movies on TV.
I have never seen a movie that shows more other movies. Yeah. I don't think.
Yeah. But all of them referencing.
Five is a low estimate.
Maybe. But almost all of them referencing something about this film. So they watch It's a Wonderful Life. They watch Looney Tunes. They, you know, they watch other cartoons.
Medical videos.
They watch Clark Gable movie that I don't know.
Is that the race car movie?
Yeah,
the race car movie.
And all of which is supposed to kind of be commenting in some ironic or twisted way about Americana, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Apps. This is what I want. Go ahead.
Yes. Yeah, no, well, take it over. But I mean, it's like, so anyway, I guess the whole point of the movie orgy thing is like, I don't know what Joe Dante feels about these things other than he obviously knows them and likes them enough to want to talk about them and has some point of view on them, but it's just so... It's so much that the orgy element of this movie, it does feel very long for an hour 40. There's nearly no story. It just feels like an assembly of juxtapositions and concepts from old films and horror movies, you know? And it's like, what would happen if we slammed all this shit together? I don't know, you know?
It feels like, I mean, it feels like it's a movie that's saying, on a script level, at least, starts off talking about what are we fundamentally as Americans, and it decides it hates what we are. And and the idea of this, what I'm confused by is this. It seems to be two core ideas to me that seem fairly easy to string together into a film that this chose not to do for some reason, which is a look at what composes us, what stories do we tell ourselves, what are the stories we tell ourselves about Santa Claus, about movies, what composes us as, what is Americana narratively. And then the idea of gremlins, which is, oh, technology is going to ruin us because technology can go wrong and things can fuck with technology.
Well, just our faith in machinery, right. I suppose. And the gremlins are the thing that undoes our faith in machinery. I mean, you can see kind of, I guess, where he must have got the idea was the concept of World War II gremlins.
Yes.
And they named the guy Gizmo. I never actually plugged any of this shit together, by the
way. Same. Watching this was interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's like you can see where all these ideas seem to locate from.
100%. But also you can think, well, there's a movie to be told there. And this movie just decides not to do that. Right. And I find that very interesting.
Well, but I mean, now that you're saying that,
question mark.
I got questions about intent, questions about that, man. But I got to say, like, even as you said that, it clicks for me, just the idea that all of this, the movies he's referencing are post-World War II movies made by World War II veterans. They're Capra and you know, all the Looney Tunes guys obviously are making cartoons in the 40s and 50s when they sort of reached their artistic apex.
Snow White, when was that?
That was the 30s. But nevertheless, it seems like that concept of post-war Americana when gears and machinery. I mean, we were talking about this just as we watched the film. We're doing a thing that sort of traffics in the retrofuturism of the early 60s, where there was this kind of paradisic utopian idea about what the future would be and how America would build it, you know? And the movie seems to want to gut all that.
Big time.
But I don't quite know why. And it just seems a little bit, I mean, maybe this is a cool thing. It's just sort of young and punk and mean about, like, fuck your old generations, basically.
I mean, I don't know how well it serves us to skip to the end, but I mean, the only message in the movie that's directly delivered is at the very end.
by the wise Asian,
by the wise, the highly othered, exoticized, extremely racist portrayal Asian wizard. Okay, if he was just a wizard, it would be fine. But,
No. He's just a your average but ancient that, Chinese man.
That's just
with the one
blue eye. Live long enough in China, you become a wizard. Is the working thesis of Steven Spielberg's world. You know, I didn't see the Player One Begins or whatever that movie's called, but I'm sure there's an Asian wizard in it somewhere. Anyway, I mean, there is the clear message delivered at the end.
We'll say it. I mean, so he buys this little monster,
I want to spend some time on the summary.
This is a bookend. The dad character, Hoyt Axton, buys the little Mogwai gizmo from an old Chinese man in a basement.
Right.
By the way, I want to talk about parallels I noticed between this and Little Shop of Horrors, which also somebody buys something from an ancient Chinese man. And it's just like a classic weird trope. Anyway, he buys it. He takes it home. And then and everything fucking mayhem. Right. Then the Chinese man comes back at the end of the movie and he
says, you were not ready for this mug. You're not ready for the Mogwai. You've done to him what you've done with all of nature's gifts. You have squandered and mistreated them.
Yes.
Something to that effect.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Which, I mean, sure. Great message. I completely agree with it. But I don't know that it actually connects with you're talking about this.
It's an okay message, but it's maybe even an interesting message.
It's the end of the Two Towers also.
Right. But it's like the guy. Yeah.
It's the end
guy
of so many things.
Maintains his other racist depiction even in delivering this message. Because I liked it kinda, this last message, until he then says, maybe one day you will be ready. His only role in this narrative is to fucking sit there, hold the magic for when Americans can get back you know, responsibility or whatever.
Right.
And it's sour. But there's so much sourness in this movie.
To be clear, I'm not in favor of the scene or the depiction.
Sounds like you like it.
I just am, I'm just saying, you know, if the message of the movie was actually us, it was actually like Americans abusing nature and not losing contact with some fundamental sense of self that is connected to nature, then sure, maybe that's interesting. If we all supposedly start out as Mogwais, but then get like perverted and turn into these like sick id machines, you know, that hate each other and hate themselves and the world, like, yeah, that's kind of interesting.
But how
is that the movie I just watched?
Of course not.
No.
But that's the part that's interesting, is that all of these things, we should do the plot, I think, but this should be a straight A to B to C structure. There's a thing, and here's a warning about it. You fuck up the warning, you have the thing, then you have to fight the creature. Like, it seems like it'd be an unfolding thing with two central metaphors it's dealing with. And then the third act is entirely surprising to me in terms of the decisions they make and the way it goes. And I was like, I'm now weirdly into what's happening because I don't understand fundamentally how it happened.
No, it goes totally off the rails. I want to say one more thing though
about long-term chaos too. It's like
the word you were looking for.
Yeah, I
could have done more of it. I'm being honest.
What?
The third act where it doesn't make any sense.
What are you constituting as the third act?
I'm
where
saying
does that start?
When,
do the story. Somebody do the story,
I
and
think
then we'll
Fletcher
start talking
start
about
it. Start doing the story, and then we'll jump in.
I'll try. I mean,
because this is going to be awesome.
I mean, famously disastrous portion of your podcast.
But this one might be the worst
synopsis.
One.
Synopsis. The synopsis.
Yeah. Kick us off with
okay.
a shitty
do
synopsis.
Do it right. Do it right.
There is a man. He is the world's saddest and worst inventor. He hates himself, and he is from a time where people thought that they could invent things and make a living. His family is dying and starving, I think.
But wait a minute. You also need to depict him. You need to depict him as he is in the film, which is bumbling, pleasant idiot, basically.
Yeah. Fat Bo Bridges. Yeah.
But like a con man, too. I mean, he's like, he's conning. He's trying to sell everybody he meets on his really bad, useless trash.
Yes, and, but he also believes.
He believes in it because he puts them in his house.
Already derailed.
No, this is good. This is good. This is what I like about doing.
But
this
he lies to himself and other people. He's not just trying to fool other people. He is lying to himself.
He believes in
clearly.
It, but there's an endless well of sadness.
Oh, for sure, because he's a failure. But he knows he's a failure.
You're putting that on the character, though.
No, he's right because when his wife doesn't use his inventions, he's like, "What's wrong? What's wrong with it?" And she's like, "Oh, sorry, I was outside."
But he's good natured about it. He knows that these things don't work.
There is one. The scene with his disgusting coffee maker that just makes diarrhea.
He's human for a second, congenial,
and he's for like, "Oh yeah, sorry, you didn't want to drink diarrhea. I don't blame you."
I wanted to belabor this just because he is also a withering, if not simplistic indictment of an American inventor character. His friendliness is a negative. He's just an idiot. He's just a moron who sort of stumbles his way through life, failing and still having a grin on his face. Mm-hmm. I think that there is a pretty vicious attack on sort of what an American is, at least an American man, traveling salesman.
Hugely. Also, it's a takedown of the self-made man, also, which is the American ideal.
I don't think it's just an inventor. I think it's the American dream.
Agreed. I think that's exactly what it's taking down. For sure. Totally. But for sure it is, and it hates it. Oh, sorry, go on. Okay. So that's the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, so this... may the old gods give me strength. So this self-hating, bumbling fool is looking for a Christmas gift for his seemingly adult child who still lives at home. His 35-year-old son who lives at home.
Who is equally bland and lacking personality.
Yes. He has less personality, I would say. So he goes, he's like, "Where am I going to get some crazy, kooky stuff?" "I know, in Chinatown, where everything is weirdo and sideways and different."
Lots of smoke.
Lots of steam and just like an inconceivable amount of people. Who are walking the streets of this Chinatown, like thousands of people.
I can't believe you started this off by pointing out how other people get bogged down.
Okay, so anyway, so he goes into this shop. It's full of stolen antiques that are from like the end of like the last wave of colonialism. Okay, so he's looking around. He thinks it's all junk because he's a fool. He doesn't know anything about history. He doesn't appreciate anything. And then he tries to sell the guy on this horrible invention that he made that has a toothbrush connected to a giant square and somehow is going to make your luggage lighter. Then this little boy, he hears...
Fundamentally, what are you doing right now?
I'm telling you the whole story. He hears
This is before the narration says, "I have a crazy story to tell." Yeah. By the way, we can't do this. We cannot possibly do this. Say that he buys a fucking guy.
All right, I'll skip ahead. So he hears a thing. It's a Mogwai.
You didn't skip ahead, really.
Little robot guy.
But he's a Furby.
He's a Furby in the store. He wants to buy it. Guy won't let him buy it. Old guy smoking an opium pipe. Won't let him buy it.
What kind of mustache does he have?
He has a very long wizardly beard.
One white eye.
The little boy. Well, yeah, one glaucoma white eye. Then so the little boy in the shop sells it to him anyway. Gives him the warnings. There's three warnings. You can't put him out in the light. He doesn't like the light. The sunlight will kill him.
Never get it wet.
Never get him wet, no matter what. And
you guys remember.
Don't feed him after midnight.
Everybody knows this.
Okay, you all remember that.
So then, skipping ahead, he obviously, all those things happen.
Why do we have to skip ahead?
I can't take it.
Description.
So good.
He fucking gets him wet. They sprout in disgusting new... Gremlin creature, Mogwai creature.
In my opinion, very awesome.
They're not so disgusting.
The sprouting is gross to me. The pain that they linger on Gizmo's face of them popping off his back.
That's sort of the first hint that this is kind of a horror movie.
Yes,
I think.
Yes.
Corey Feldman is great. By the way,
I want to talk a lot about him later. Let's get through this because I want to talk about Corey Feldman.
So they get him wet by accident. Now there's a bunch of Mogwais. Okay, he takes him to the science teacher, who's a sadist.
Oh, boy.
Another lunatic.
Real strange. We'll dig into that later, I guess. He does some tests. First of all, I just want to say, no one is confused by this emergence of this entirely new being or creature. I really
no. Everyone is like, okay.
They're just like, this is interesting.
I mean, is it because there's no internet to look up the animals of the world?
It's a shitty version of America. It's just plot service, I think.
Okay. So anyway,
but it makes a point. But I think you're onto something because it does. It always makes a point to say that these people are doing everything wrong. Yeah, like they're completely irresponsible.
Right.
And by the time you get to this point in the movie, you think, oh, is every adult in this movie insane?
Every person, every character,
and then you realize, oh yeah, it's every
because not because even Zach Gilligan, the main character, is a cipher, a moron, like. Blank-eyed cipher, like it's
in the scene we're discussing. He puts more water on Gizmo
to show
him and makes another one, which is really confusing.
I think only one though, which is odd. Oh, it's because it's a drop.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's one drop per creature. That's the rules. Of
that's
the,
what we learned.
That's
in
how
that
gremlins
scene.
Work, man.
Okay, so then,
but stop and think about for us, so listeners. Imagine this setup for a movie. Like, you have a great, perfect, standard movie setup here. We have, here's three rules you don't follow. Here's a mystical creature delivered to you by a mystical guy. Mm-hmm. Accidents
racist
happen. Those three things happen. Boom. You're off to the races, right? Mm-hmm. That's the movie that you think you're in.
Yeah.
Right.
Standard. So standard.
Well, it's
so
all
far.
Pretty. It's standard until you it takes a dive off the deep end.
Well, that's what I just want to set up is how standard it feels.
But my favorite section of the entire movie comes next, which is a fairly long, maybe 20-minute stretch of just fucking nuts and bolts, beautiful horror.
Great.
That was
filmmaking.
That was the only scene that I actually enjoyed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is, there's extra Mogwais now. They chew through the kid's alarm clock so he doesn't know what time it is.
Tricked him.
So they're already up to no good, these little rascals. Mm-hmm. So he feeds them after midnight. And then they become these cocoons, and they pupate in these.
Oh, and they're
cocoons.
Also watching Invasion of the Body Snatchers, mm-hmm. which is where all this is coming from. Okay. So the movie signals itself every time it for a while it signals every time it's going to make a sharp transition, mm-hmm. and now it's like here's the pods and horror sequence. Here mm-hmm. you go, and then you off you go.
Right, Gizmo the good Mogwai refuses to eat, so he stays unchanged. So these things pupate for a while. So does the one at the
school.
Looks so cool.
And they do look cool and gross.
Yeah,
and
totally.
I enjoyed that.
Yep.
Then they all emerge at the same time. The one at the school kills the science teacher.
Yes.
And wreaks havoc in the school.
In a pretty solid,
that's awesome,
pretty
horror
good
sequence.
Pretty good.
Suspense sequence.
The ones at home get down into the house, and the mom, this is the only sequence I enjoyed, the mom has to try to kill them all. She very quickly decides to kill them all, which I think is really
it turns so
bizarre.
Fast on you. This movie turns so fast on you because you go from, oh, we're in a full-on horror film here. Okay, there's things. And Joe Dante does a great job of keeping the actual full reveal of the creatures off screen for quite a while and then gives you a glimpse of one then hides them again, which I think is wonderful horror directing.
Totally.
And you're like, oh, cool, we're in a bit of a cat and mouse. These are our main villains. And then basically you get to the mom where she goes full Rambo on
these things. It is a masterpiece of a short sequence. It's like 5 or 6 minutes long, maybe, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. Builds up a really beautiful amount of suspense with some ominous music. It's building a lot of suspense, building. And then it's like, suckers, now it's a splatterfest. Now we're just going to go blood on the walls. And it's like, what? Like, it's really, really well done in terms of transitioning from one to the other.
Well, the first one it does.
Because you don't see her, you're right, you don't see it coming that the mom is going to decide to just obliterate these things.
Well, tell the first one she does. The first one is the perfect choice for how it happens.
Right, he's sitting in a mixing bowl, which behaves more like a blender in this sequence.
Like a blender.
Yeah. And she sneaks up on
him
and immediately turns it on and his green blood and guts
are everywhere.
He just
bursts all over the
walls.
I want
to say, unless I missed it, it seems like huge missed opportunity here to actually make some of this guy's crappy inventions play a role in the movie. Instead of using a microwave, he could have used any of the horrible, stupid things that he makes crack holes in their heads instead of cracking eggs that don't work, or juicing them, putting them in the juicer that we already see doesn't work.
17 or so inventions by this point.
It feels like
maybe 30.
That's a great point. For the amount of time that we see watching this juicing machine obliterate an orange.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you put the fucking gremlin in there?
Why not?
Because that's what happens with the mixing bowl, is like he just splatters all over the room. So.
And finally, okay. This pathetic man's life would have purpose.
But again, that's
saved his wife that he doesn't deserve.
But the movie doesn't even want him to have that success.
Okay, yeah, it's even crueler than
that's the problem. Yeah.
And so anyway, in this sequence also, and she arms herself with a knife. She just stabs one to death.
Yeah, that's
she then
cool.
stuffs one in, like we said, in the microwave. It blows up like in full graphic Evil Dead Technicolor.
Yeah, it's cool.
And then she goes and fights one in a tree. It's just
sequence. But great. I want to talk about this, because this is where the movie is, like, again, trying to do a thing. So it starts off with Corey Feldman dressed as a tree in order to sell trees to other people. So literally as a kid wrapped in consumerism and the symbol of fucking fake holiday bullshit, Christmas bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
Phoebe Cates is like, fuck Christmas. We'll get to that. Whatever. Christmas killed my dad.
She's good, though.
We'll get to her. But then here you have a mother literally attacked by the symbol of American consumerism.
Attacked by Christmas.
She's attacked by a Christmas tree, and she stabs the shit out of it, and it scratches her up. And I'm like,
first she slashes open the stockings.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
right,
exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, totally. There's all this stuff that, and I think it's so fucking funny. Like, I'm so into this, what this movie's doing here, because it's so, like Kaylin said, it's very mean about American ideology.
It's so badly done that it.
That's what I like about it.
Well, this sequence is not bad.
I'm into this.
Nothing about this.
No, I'm.
Oh, the ideas.
The ideas.
Oh, we're gonna get to where it all falls apart. But at this point in the movie, I'm like. That's funny. That's funny how much you hate America. That's cool. And you hate its people. Okay, I'm into it.
If I wasn't already so tired from watching the beginning of the movie, I would agree with you.
Right.
But I literally got up and went to your kitchen and without asking, got an apple and brought it back and ate it. Because, like, if I didn't have a little extra blood sugar, I was not going to see the end of this movie.
Yeah. Well, but I got to say, the other thing about that, this sequence.
I've never seen this movie, by the way. I have never seen this movie.
Ah, very interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that it took me, even this time, having seen the movie quite a few times, it took me, I was struggling as well. And there are things I like about it. I know I'll belabor this because it's the best thing about the movie, but I just love watching, occasionally it falters, but mostly when he's working and he's on fire, I love watching Joe Dante work. Mm-hmm. And he does things that are really just fucking satisfying and beautiful to me as a filmmaking. His lighting is really beautiful and dark. And then he also does a thing that I think Spielberg does too, and I'm very curious where they got this, and I don't know the answer, but he does a thing that is so effective where he starts a frame and then dollies the camera to a new frame. And that is that's an emotional feeling of coming in close to something scary, or even just repositioning on an exterior. Like, and I just love it. It feels so fucking good.
It's amazing. Well, he does it with the first time I really clocked it and then started paying attention to that move was when the orange invention.
Right.
He tells a story of the orange invention with the dolly move.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He does that. He does reveals all over
it's
the place,
so smart.
Which is really great. Yeah. And so he's very talented on so many levels, and just as just a tactician, and just a, you know, the nature of the filmmaking is often, not always, but often very, very appealing. And this whole sequence, this whole horror sequence right here in the middle or at the end of the first act or whatever it is, top of the second maybe, it's just like delightful. And mm-hmm. but what I was going to say at the beginning earlier is I was so uncomfortable, and I was having such a bad time because I didn't know until this sequence that the movie hated itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, oh, all that shit that I was bored by that felt like stock and annoying and abrasive with the old lady and the snowman and the fucking dog and like the office.
It shits on Wizard of Oz too. We
yeah,
talk about
totally.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I'm like, I was like, this is so uncomfortable. And I was like, finally, when I got here, I was like, oh, it's supposed to be.
Like, can I just say this?
That's the fucking
This is
vibe.
Indicative. This is a sequence at the very beginning where this kid, his car won't work. And his neighbor's like, you shouldn't buy foreign cars. You shouldn't buy foreign cars. They're terrible. So he has to walk to work, which, as Fletcher pointed out, is about a 30-second walk. Which
but, lots, I think.
He goes to his, like, shitty bank job. And it tracks this woman, Mrs. Deagle, who it affiliates with the bank. She's a co-owner or something.
Yeah,
she's carrying a decapitated snowman head through town to, like, basically a Wizard of Oz song. And right. She gets to the
knocking
bank and she's
over
like,
baby carriages.
Yeah, not, I mean, everything.
Spitting on homeless people.
Kicking small children. Yeah. It was, so she gets there and she says, where's your dog? To our main character. Where's your dog? he knocked over my snowman. This is all that's left of it. I'm going to take him and I'm going to murder him. I'm going to take him and give him to the pound. They're going to kill. They're going to put him down. Or if I catch him, I'm going to put him in my dryer and turn it on high. And I'm going to murder your fucking dog, you piece of shit.
And you're not. And the problem with this, which sounds delightful, and that it's there's a way where the descriptions that she gives are obviously over the top, and that's fun all by itself. What I was having so much trouble with, and I think the movie has suffered from this. People have sort of accused it of having a bland lead. Zach Gilligan, mm-hmm. who I think is the main character, is not reacting like a human being.
Not at all.
He's just a blank, like, ooh, like, what? Ooh, sorry, ooh, my dog, ooh. And mm-hmm. that is incredibly annoying. Yeah. It is almost unbearably annoying.
It's very
and
strange.
I don't think it's his fault. He's not particularly good, but he's also seems to be playing it as he was instructed, which is like, don't really do anything. Yeah. Just take it. You know, and it's skin-crawlingly annoying.
I sometimes had the impression that this was like a North Korean soundstage, and these people were all like prisoners. Like, these were like Western prisoners who are being forced to make this film. Like, some of these actors, I'm just like, I couldn't help but just feel sorry for them.
That's right. The problem is
what they're being in this film.
The problem is being the lead in this film, because a lot of other people get to do stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's doing a Wicked Witch of the West impression. Straight up, that's what she was told to do, almost certainly, right?
And it doesn't make any sense in the scene with any of the other characters.
Well, exactly. Unlike Dorothy, who's crying and freaking out and being like, oh my God, we have to take care of this crazy woman who says she's going to steal my dog. He's just like, bleh.
Yep.
And it's like, as I finally get into the movie, I'm like, that's a joke. Like, that's a gag. Like, but he is a ridiculous lead.
It's not a good
it's just a very uncomfortable movie. And that's, I think, its design. And again, we'll get back to this later. What we started as is like, who the fuck is this movie for?
Well, I was going to say, is there a way to make this, and I think that there is, an uncomfortable movie
for sure.
Or enjoyable.
100%. That's the big mystery of this podcast now, is figuring out why they didn't do that. Because it's so easy, I feel like. Okay, wait. So where you are in the plot here. Still, I want to point out, very much on track to be a standard plot.
Okay,
which is now the creatures, inevitably, you've broken the two of the three rules. Right. And, you know, I guess how it's going to end, the third rule. But the two of the three rules you've broken, and now we're firmly into fun and games, and it's fucking horror time.
Well, and because you have in your head an idea of what gremlins are, I guess, they target machines.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can kind of, again, you can sort of piece together, like, oh, okay, so that's how they get people. They mess with traffic lights. They kill the evil old woman by messing with her stairway ramp, which launches her out a window very aggressively. Like, it's all, and that's all kind of, it's all kind of cool, I guess. But again, I'm not rooted in anybody. This is just happening to this town.
But it doesn't start happening until Stripe,
whose
name's Stripe.
All but one of the gremlins have been murdered by the mother, or by, I guess all by the mother.
No, Jimmy, is that his name?
I don't know.
Oh, Corey Feldman came and killed
him? No, the...
The main character. He whacked one in. He used a sword to whack it in the fireplace.
Oh, yeah. He cut off his head and throws his gremlin head in the fire and it burns.
That's
cool. Fucking awesome.
It's all pretty cool.
No, that's so cool.
And then, so the one named Stripe, who has a mohawk, which I find offensive as a lover of punk music.
Why is he called Stripe?
Because he has a mohawk.
Oh.
Stripe on his head.
Guys,
no,
get
I find it?
It
offensive that he has a mohawk. That's what. So
I had this conversation the other day because Dallas is really into mohawks and he likes asking everybody in the world, like, what color mohawk do you want?
Yeah.
Is mohawk cultural appropriation?
Yeah, for sure it is.
It is 100%.
For sure. It has to be.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, I mean, depends on what culture you're from. It's a cultural appropriation for any of us.
Yeah.
Everybody he's talking to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Just making sure.
Great. Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
18-year-old Dallas.
Cultures.
Good job.
So, but, you know, also it's taken on a life of its own now, obviously. So who's to say for sure? But
well, we ruined it. It was a pure symbol of nature, and now
we weren't ready for it. So anyway, Stripe escapes, and he goes to the YMCA, and he jumps in a pool, and he makes like a million
which is awesome. I'm just gonna say that.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Oh, it's a beautiful,
it's
so
a beautiful
shot.
Shot.
Yeah.
It's, I think it's the
so
best
good.
Effect in the movie is
the bubbling
pool.
So great.
Yeah,
awesome. Tons of smoke, which Joe Dante's into, and so am I. It turns out.
Yeah, and it's super red.
It's really good. Yeah,
and again, you are and you're thinking like, what's gonna happen now?
Well, but again, let me point out, let me flag what a traditional film at this point, because now you've got your villains, you've established your rules, you're in fun and games.
I would
and
argue
then
that the traditional film would have this would be your third act.
I agree. This would be your turn into three.
Like,
for
oh
sure.
God, if those five were a problem, now we're going to
a
the
million?
Big finale with thousands.
100%. So you start to see this, and you go,
instead,
why is this happening
we're
so
at
soon?
About halfway.
Yeah, exactly.
If not earlier.
So this is the question, because I'm going to flag that, because this is where the movie fucking takes a wild turn. up till now, we're in standard, pretty solid plot point movie town. All right, what happens next?
I'm just not used to holding such a such a silly small microphone.
How dare you? This is a professional recording studio.
Yeah.
Everyone, just so you know, we all have mics and headsets, and he's just acting weird about it.
And and Jimmy Buffett's in the next sound contained booth, laying down some sick.
Can't
licks.
Believe you chose Jimmy Buffett. Please
well, it's
on.
Just your hat.
I don't know what this has to do with sailors. All right.
Anyway. What happens next? I mean, how do I describe what happens next?
This is all
Travis?
I want you to do. This is all I've been waiting for is for you to try to take a stab at this next 20-minute sequence.
Give
it your best swing.
Okay, so the gremlins go around. They visit all the characters that we've met. They murder them all in different ways.
Do not fucking summarize this part. When you were so clear on the
intro. I know
what
you want to get to, and you should just get to, like, yes, you're right. They just go around murdering people.
In different, in somewhat ironic ways sometimes.
Sort of, yeah.
Sort of, little bit. It could have been more ironic, but it's not.
Totally.
And then we get to go hang out in this bar that's going to be closed down.
Well, and by the way, can I just say before you get to this, critically, the movie makes a hard gear shift in perspective, because as loose as it was before, here's where the Gremlins theme kicks in.
Yes.
And suddenly you're on the side of the Gremlins. Like, you are now partying with the Gremlins as they murder the people that you were annoyed by in the first act.
Right.
And he's using the right word. You are partying with Gremlins here.
Yes.
Straight up.
To Latvian Danny Elfman music.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's vaguely Eastern European synthesizer.
It's klezmer
music. Synthesizer
right.
music.
It's,
yeah.
And it's fucking rad.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Go on.
It's from the Korg mini klezmer.
That's a joke for four of you.
Yeah,
it's a good one.
Okay, they'll get it. Optional.
Those are the same people who liked my caps for sale.
we're in the bar. We're with this lovely gal in the bar who works there.
Phoebe Cates.
As charity, so that the bar won't close. So weird. There's so many weird
things.
It's
Americana,
just like,
though.
Sick, yeah, American
it's a
ideal
sick thing, American yeah. Americana. The local watering hole has to be staffed by free high school labor, child labor. It's like this. It's an amazing fuck you of Americana.
Right. Yeah.
And so she's here pouring them all drinks.
Okay,
so we haven't even
you
got
heard
the
that
setup
right.
of this.
She's pouring drinks for gremlins dressed as gangsters. Okay, so I just want to set the scene. Yeah. And one of them smoking four cigarettes. And I think one might have an eye patch. Okay, so go on.
Yeah, so they're all lined up on the bar, and she's frantically pouring them all drinks.
Why?
No context.
No one knows.
No context.
Well,
no.
She because you don't enter this with her, you enter it with the gremlins.
Yeah.
There's just suddenly it's like this lady they're tormenting by forcing her to give them drinks. But she's also just like going.
Well,
for
I don't want to. I don't want to.
She
really
kind of acts like she's still working.
Oh, for sure. Like, she's totally. On the clock. She's on the clock. And I don't want to. I don't want to. I really want you to go on this. I just want to back up a little bit, because the first time you get to see gremlins acting like people, which is weird, is in a Christmas Carol scene. And so what happens is we've seen Christmas carolers before in the background of a shot previously, and
a shot that made me hate Christmas carolers.
It's supposed to.
Yeah, I know.
It's
it
supposed
works.
To make you fuck you Christmas.
Yeah,
and
gross.
So
we've
seen it. The gremlins haven't, but who cares?
Mm-hmm.
And they are Christmas. They're all dressed. They have scarves and they have sort of like earmuffs and they have songbooks and they're imitating American singing Christmas carols.
Yeah, they're going.
Yeah.
And they're moving and they're looking down at their books for like the lyrics.
Yeah.
And so that's when you're like, wait, what the fuck is happening?
Mm-hmm.
They're acting like adults and humans for some reason.
Well,
as a Christmas.
But you know what it is. Of course you do. It's Looney Tunes. He's decided he's decided that the gremlins, and I don't know who decided, whether Chris Columbus or Joe Dante, but my money's on Joe Dante, considering he directed
completely agree
Looney
and
Tunes
I
back in action. But I want to take a moment
he
here
did?
Because He loves the Looney Tunes, famously.
I'm gonna flag the Joe Dante versus Chris Columbus thing for later.
Okay, great. But I just want to say one thing about Looney Tunes. It's like I love them, of course. But there's a great thing here in LA at Quentin Tarantino's theater in the New Beverly, where once a month, every Saturday, they do Cartoon Club. And it's so fun, and I took Dallas, and it was wonderful. It was totally great. The cartoons were all on film, and they had cool. Sort of a little historian guy talk about it before. There were a lot of kids. It was awesome.
That's
and
great.
I'm going to go next Saturday if anybody wants to come. One-time guest Derek Armijo was also there, and it was great to see him. But about the cartoons, they're for men.
Right.
They're for men.
Right,
is who is making them, and that is who they are for.
Right.
Like, kids enjoy them, I guess, like in a sideways sort of a way, because it's like cartoons are funny and people getting hit by mallets and explosions are like amusing.
Sideways.
But
like
the joke, it is packed full of demented kind of anti-family jokes for dudes, for middle-aged men.
There's an article that was just written about how a lot of literary history was canonized by Looney Tunes, a lot of people know all of the classic stories, Great Expectations, or Shakespeare, Henry IV. It's all through Looney Tunes, and a lot of the next generation doesn't have the same entry point to those stories. So a lot of the times, people talk about classic stories with their entry point is Looney Tunes.
Disney
shorts too, probably.
Sure, but what I'm talking about is that there's like the father bear and the three bears is smashing his gigantic baby son with frying pans and creating facial implants in the thing while he like berates and blows up at his wife.
Right.
Let me be clear. It is. Yes.
Yeah.
It is like they're all coiled rage and it is super funny. It is fucking so funny. These cartoons, like more than I ever thought, honestly.
Cause now you're that
but
guy.
But I'm also like, what the hell?
Kaelin's become that guy.
It did feel that I was like, holy God. Like I've been waiting all this time to like get like, I mean, it's sort of a dirty thing now because you can't really talk about it, but like I was a massive Ren and Stimpy guy, and obviously Chris Faluci is a monster. But those cartoons, I didn't realize how much they reflected the original Looney Tunes in their demented kind of aggression and violence, and sort of feeling of like I'm not part of this family and like wanting to hit people like all the time. So anyway, all to say, this movie embodied that spirit very well. It was almost too nakedly aggressive and mean. Even compared to those cartoons.
I think that's right. I also wonder if they're also drawing from the same wellspring. If the sort of the source of the creative frustration or like anger at America is coming from the same place.
Very possibly. Tapping into something. Totally.
So sorry, go back. So I just want to flag that the first time we see them is in fact imitating and mocking Christmas carolers.
Yeah. I guess that's our first hint that somehow these like magical creatures have like downloaded the collective unconscious.
Well, they've downloaded
American culture.
That's right.
We don't know how. We don't have any context. We've seen the Mogwai. We've seen Gizmo, the Mogwai, learning from television and picking things up.
Right.
But these characters just mainline it.
Oh my God, that's interesting. Because you're right. It all comes through Gizmo, and he's seen these things, and presumably that's where they're drawing it from. And this is their rage source.
This is like the perverse.
This is why I think it's important where it starts is because what you see in the beginning is people spreading Christmas joy. Which we sort of learned to hate.
Half-heartedly.
Well, I guess that's the thing.
Mechanically
sharing Christmas joy. Yeah. But then we see the mirror version of it, the mustached Spock version of this thing, where they come out and they go, okay, now we're going to spread fucking horror.
This
is our kickoff into this.
Right.
Whatever. Yeah. The evil universe.
And then it follows the longest and most physically uncomfortable sequence, mostly because, and this is my thing, and I'm not going to inflict this upon you guys, but like I know now I have a puppet problem. I didn't hate these guys, but I was just
this.
It's like they don't move right, and the shots are too tight to disguise the fact that there are puppeteers, and the jokes are fucking belabored because they got to turn the puppet and the thing. There's nothing smooth about them.
Yeah.
There's nothing physically like delightful to me about them. They're all like. And it's not because they're ugly, although they kind of are, but it's just like, I don't like watching puppets move. Nothing about them moves right.
I loved it.
Yeah. I mean, I love puppets. I love, but when they are done well and there is, and they serve a purpose, I mean, I feel like, I mean, the Muppet movies, I believe, in your bag. I believe I was the contributor
there. They're all in there.
I love Jim Henson. I love puppetry when it is...
Do you like Labyrinth?
Yes, I do.
Killer.
I haven't seen it.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, it's great.
So I probably don't like it.
You love it.
I remember listening to your podcast and being like, maybe
yes, I win.
But I like the, but I like, I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm sure I would like the creatures in it. I think I would find them interesting. Right. But no, I found this joyless and interminable.
Well, no, it's a fuck you to puppeteering too.
Yeah, it is.
It's so, so weird.
Well, it is amazing to spend all this time to be like, all right, go make me a puppet that shakes a lot and then smoke pours out of its ears for one shot, irrelevantly. And now make me a puppet that sits there smoking in the dark, and then another puppet shows up with puppets on his hands and starts annoying him.
And then there's like a flasher puppet, a puppet wearing a trench coat that shows his non-existent genitalia to Phoebe Cates. Well, I mean, we could do this for an hour. I'm not joking, guys.
There's
we
a flash dance puppet.
It was probably
there's
internal
a puppet on
genitalia.
The goddamn fan.
I mean, like, most creatures are able to retract their genitalia.
That's right. But no, also, Kaylin's being clear. It is from the movie Flashdance, and it's intentional, and it's there's the a full, I would say, 30-second Flashdance sequence in this movie, which
is
long.
That
really
is
long.
When, I don't know if you recall, I groaned and said out loud, when will this end?
And when you said that, I was so into it.
Yeah, that's because that sequence was like the sequence version of the hat that you're wearing right
now. Yeah, it's true. It's true. It is. Because it's so, it is in that it's confusing as to how it happened.
Yes.
Like,
and it's
why?
Inflammatory for no reason. Yeah,
that's right. It makes people.
Why does it make me so mad?
It makes people with taste really upset.
Yeah. Yeah,
us tasteless guys are so into it.
You want to know what it just occurred to me, and we'll continue down. Although we're deep into this thing by now, but like,
oh my God.
These guys, by the way, Spielberg, Zemeckis, I'm sure Dante, they were all really. You know what movie really rocked their fucking world?
Huh.
Texas Chainsaw. They saw that thing and were like, "Holy God!" Like, and that is, I feel, a complete masterpiece. And it's only now occurring to me that, on some level, if I learn to watch and appreciate Gremlins as the Texas Chainsaw Massacre of like Amblin,
yeah,
okay. Like, I'll roll with it. I can roll with it. It's not, doesn't make me feel good, and it's way too brutal on my eyeballs and like jarring in its tonal shifting, and I don't know that it's ever in control of itself, but it's like, it's just a scream of hate.
Well, it becomes, this is what the sequence becomes.
I wish it had screamed louder. If it was going to scream, like it was, for me, like,
I hear
the muted scream of hate that that I found
kind of stuffed into a kitty box or something.
Yeah, and I never reached any kind of catharsis. So I'm just squirming in discomfort, in mild discomfort, which
there's
is
no...
like what could I mean, you know,
yeah.
That's a form of hell. You know, like squirming in mild discomfort.
And having no resolution
and
to
having
it.
No, yes.
And there is
and
no,
never,
catharsis.
No catharsis.
I think that's very fair, but this sequence became a list of things we fucking hate. And so I loved it because you hate Flashdance and Ray Charles and poker and like puppets. You hate puppets? That's weird because it's a puppet thing, and you hate flashers. That's cool. I also hate flashers. You hate people who smoke
at
bars.
Dance. You hate gangster movies.
Yes, but like what a crazy idea of we're going to take 15 minutes, maybe 20, and just do a puppet version of fucking things in America that we think fucking suck. That's a wild idea in a movie. Again, up to this point, very standard horror film, and now they're just listing
it's
things.
No longer, it stops being a horror film completely. That's the other thing we need to be clear about. Is it abandons its horror, you know.
It's also not quite
completely.
A comedy. It's just a thing at this point. It's not. It's not a comedy. It's not a horror film. It is a list of.
Again,
it kind of gets there when they.
Store,
yeah, but that almost feels
like an Evil Dead. Reference.
Yes, but that almost feels like they're just like, well, we have to end this where we started on some. Like, how could you end it with just puppets going crazy? Like, that doesn't make any sense. So at least they have the sort of vaguely standard taste to come back and say, all right, we got to kill the bad guys.
Right.
So
but
should I keep going with the plot?
Wait, hold on. Oh, in a second. Yeah.
Nah.
But in the thing we set out to do here, which was, okay, Gremlins, I get it. They're a World War II reference. The movie tells us that straight up. It's the things that get in your machines and fuck them up.
Yeah,
they're the reasons why your American ideal isn't functioning. That's a gremlin, right?
Yeah.
And this inventor guy is the American version of this. Nothing he makes works. And you go, I get it. I know exactly where we are, metaphorically, right?
Right.
And so the movie then, after showing you a couple gremlins messing with traffic lights, as Kaylin said, messing with this woman's thing, then just abandons willfully all of its setup, all of its point, all of its metaphor, and just has about a 30-minute sequence of things
that we want to mock, the things we want to make fun
and
of.
By the way, it's so true. You're really on to something here.
You think
here.
It's 30 minutes?
I think it might be 20 to 30 minutes of just
not
aimless.
Just that scene.
Oh, yeah, all the chaos.
But including, like, we hate people who go to the movies.
Yep.
We hate everybody
I was about
in
the
theater.
To get to that. Yeah.
We hate
cops. It is. Yeah. But that to me is intentional. It's a, oh, yeah, yeah, we also hate you. Fuck you. You dumb idiot popcorn swilling pig
fucks. Enjoying this movie?
Yeah, you like movies? Assholes. You idiot. Fuck you. Oh, you and your squirming kids, you talking in movies pieces of shit?
Yeah.
Like, but this is fascinating to me. I don't believe you guys aren't into this.
No,
because
you're
kind
of selling me on it now.
Yeah, because it goes from the bar scene of like, oh, yeah, you fucking dumb, fat American idiot drinkers who play poker in bars and you make fun of your wait staff. You don't tip the bartender she's working for free. Fuck you, piece of shit.
I love it.
And
it's just a ranting maniac who can't stop.
Yeah.
And you!
And you! Also you, you piece of shit. You eating candy, you popcorn, fat fuck. It, like, but that's what it becomes.
You Disney singing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You think you like Snow White, you piece of shit? Fuck you. That song sucks. You know, I'm going to show you it sucks. We're going to show you some gremlins kind of half singing it and making you realize that song's a piece of shit. Because we heard somebody singing hi ho on the way to work today and it made me mad, so it's going in the fucking movie.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
But how wonderful is this that it becomes an angry fuck you to America here?
It's like, and never more angry and misanthropic than this thing that we teased at the top, which I do want to just talk about, is like, it gives, if you were unclear, and maybe this is what you meant about, is it Chris Columbus or is it Joe Dante?
We'll get to that. I got thoughts about that.
But if you were uncertain about whether this movie hates you and your children, it gives a stop at it, just freeze the film out of nowhere monologue that is just about the death of a character's father in the most hideous and sick kind of twisted joke way.
So horrible.
That then ends with, and any kids left in the house? Santa's not real, you sons of bitches.
Yeah,
like, that's this movie. It's
blown
crazy.
I was blown away by that sequence. I mean,
I bet you that is in the script. So I have a lot of thoughts about this. And I think that where the movie is tracking its central metaphor, which this monologue fully is in movie town. Like, they were the central metaphor of the film, which is your American dream is a goddamn fake nightmare. Yeah. It's not even a real nightmare. It's fucking fake.
Yeah.
The fact that the movie takes a second
I'm on
to
board
do
with
that
message. I mean,
it's awesome. It's such a funny thing for a horror film to do.
The
real monster is you dumb idiot. Like, that's so cool.
I feel like, is that not a trope of horror movies? I feel like horror movies often are sort of taking down, like, the illusion of...
They aren't taking down you. Like, this movie... One of the things that this movie feels sadistic... When I call it sadistic, I think that it's beyond kind of dark ideas.
Right.
It's freewheeling in its loathing.
Right.
And it looks right at you. Anybody who would have the stones to have enjoyed E.T. and now want to see another one, it's not just going to give you a bad time. It's going to ruin your year. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, it's not like, by the way, I'm saying all this and I'm also saying I get why someone loves it. And I like it in a way. Like, I respect it, and it's just unusual beyond all belief. But it is a really, really mean, cruel little piece of shit movie. Like, it's a nasty little guy.
It really, really hates children. In a startling way.
I think it's delighted at the tears of kids. Like, that's what you feel when you're watching this movie. Is like, well, if we haven't got them yet, now we
And
won't.
That it was really, I mean, I don't know what the marketing was like, but I feel like it was marketed
from
towards
Steven Spielberg.
Children.
Yeah,
Amblin
sure.
Entertainment.
How do you not?
It was rated PG.
How do you not? I mean, but they created
that
character
so
as a little bait to pull in kids and then have to watch this movie. I mean, look.
And then 15 years later, they design a Furby.
Yeah, right. I don't want to get so far away from this, because I also want to say I understand that a child might like this, because it's subversive.
I don't think a child would like this.
I can understand one. I mean, your friend did.
You know,
and I think it's because there's
Mad Magazine.
There's a joy. But there's a joy in like ripping apart sacred cows. I mean, there's a scream of like, if you were like 10 or 9 or whatever, and you saw this, I'd be like, yeah, like, that movie's amazing. I can't believe they did that shit.
Also, more importantly, if you're a kid who, say, is 13 when E.T. comes out, and you're like, God, that movie's so schmaltzy. It's not for me, and fuck this movie. And I'm a punk kid. Mm-hmm. You go see this. This is your banner movie. Like,
that's a good point.
There's a gremlin that pushes E.T. out of the way. Like, literally,
there's
a doll
E.T.
of E.T.
shelf.
And he shoves E.T.
And he's left as in a gallery of Looney Tunes. I mean, he's left with Sylvester and Bugs Bunny.
Uh-huh.
And, like,
Wonderful.
I mean, you know, it's a weird-ass movie.
Yeah, anyway, so then I'll just tell you then, because they didn't do it, is that there's this awesome death scene for Stripe, which I think we should talk about. Because finally, the third thing,
level death
scene. We get back to our horror movie. It becomes a script again, basically, where the unfired gun on the wall is the third of the three dictums, which is do not let them ever get in the sun. Because they will die.
Right. But by the way,
cocaine fueled rant of hatred is over.
Get ready.
The sunlight comes out, and you're like, "Who am I? I've been up all night. I said some horrible things.
I'm sorry.
I have no friends anymore.
What are these stains all over my clothing?
And it reminds you, it's like, this is a normal. We're a normal
other
movie.
It's got an after hours.
We're a normal movie again. We're gonna kill our villain in a way that's like satisfying.
But it's. But by the way, it's normal in that I didn't. Don't derive a great deal of joy out of this horror sequence in the way that I did in the mother and house sequence. It's just by the numbers.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It returns. You come out of a fever dream.
It's a good effect.
Yes, agreed. Yeah.
You come out of a fever dream of insanity, and I love that it's back to. Not only is it a normal movie at that point, they go out of their way to make it normal. There's two jumping dog jokes. There's a dog that's surprised by Gizmo as it zooms by in its little Clark Gable car. And it's like it's almost trying to be stupid and cute.
Yeah, totally.
Which is funny to me.
The fever dream is a good. I think that's maybe an important kind of feeling touchstone for.
Mm.
Yeah. I don't know if either how many bad trips either of you have had, but there is a little quality. There's a little touch
of the
bad trip that maybe some of this is drawing upon or based on. Not so much
like I didn't think it would ever end.
Yes, and that's what I mean. I don't mean like the dramatic like hell realm like demon visitation bad trip. I mean the why can't I just feel normal again?
When am
I gonna feel normal again? Why have I never appreciated normal feeling enough before? I want to just go back to the mundane, normal feeling that's not that bad, but it's not that great, but it's fine.
That's a great distillation of the final feeling and theme, though, which is like these people have not really learned anything. They're apologetic, but they don't quite know what they did. And the guy comes and he's like, "I'll see you later, assholes," basically.
Insane.
And then he walks off into an insanely awkward and attractive, but like unreal matte painting, which is very weird.
I think my theory is that the Asian wizard is going back into his Norman Rockwell painting. I think that's an America joke to me.
He's leaving the Norman Rockwell painting.
Isn't he going into the painting, basically? He is. Well, he's walking basically into the painting.
He's not part of
it. I'm not saying it's a clean metaphor. Okay. I'm just saying that what I think is, the idea is this is an idyllic town.
It does seem intentionally fake in a way that like is not accidental and is obviously calling attention to itself. But at that point I got the feeling, I got the vibe, and I don't quite know what that means. So it goes. It is a much more insane movie than I initially thought. And I thought it was pretty crazy.
And the real button on them not learning anything from the experience, I think, is beautifully, you know, showcased by the world's worst, saddest inventor giving the Chinese wizard one of his horrible inventions as an apology after he's just been indicted for like being a piece of shit who abuses
nature
and just is like wasting everything. He gives him wasteful garbage that is meant to help dispose of cigarettes, wasteful garbage.
And
the guy's like, "Cool, thanks."
He's like, "Thanks."
This other idiot already tried to give this to me.
But he seems also genuinely appreciative.
He's just pitying this idiot. He's like, oh god,
you're so much dumber than I even thought you were. So, thanks. Yeah, thanks for that. I'm really gonna enjoy it. I think it's gonna be a big hit.
It's amazing that even the racist stereotypes are like, you Americans are too pathetic. It's an amazing idea.
It's quite a twist.
It's a good Chris Columbus thing. The thing
that should be the most offensive thing about the movie or aspect of the movie is actually it's potentially the redeeming qualities and characters.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's totally amazing.
Can I do 1 minute on Joe Dante versus Chris Columbus?
Absolutely.
Just because I think, I'm being unfair to both, I think, but when I think about this on the page versus this on the screen, it feels like it's a experimental art project wrestling with a very traditional sort of kids, maybe mm-hmm. middle grade horror film. And the swings it takes between those two movies is what's fascinating to me and interesting to me. And I just sort of in my head characterize that as things Joe Dante found interesting and wanted to put in the movie, because they're not on the page, a lot of those things, I think, and the things that Chris Columbus found interesting. And I can see how this could be a cool spec script. I think it's like pretty tight and pretty like clear about what it's doing. It's structured fine.
Yeah. I bet you the script is more, on some levels, more traditional, but just as sort of vicious. And then when you add Joe Dante to crank up the cartoon qualities of that, those attacks, it's quite another animal.
It's a great combo of like kind of a traditional storyteller at his nastiest, for sure, amped up with a guy who is just, oh yeah, we're gonna do a gross fucking fuck you movie, sign me up.
Yeah.
I got so many ideas and so many things I hate about America I'd love to talk about in a kid's film major release.
And
so
it was a hit. I mean, the other thing is, like, we don't really have time to talk about this at length because I think we got to wrap it up here, but it is a bit bewildering to me that it's essentially a classic. And I mean, I get it's that so like weird. Movies from this era, if they were different and they had a unique voice, almost that was enough to convince people it was worthy of attention. Yeah. But like, I look at this and I look at Bill and Ted Bogus Journey and I'm like, Gremlins is the classic.
Yeah. It's weird.
Like,
right?
That movie is so much more insane than Bill and Ted, which is sort of this joyful creativity. And this is like, just so acid. Maybe that's what it takes. It's just more different even than Bill and Ted. And I don't know, but
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, I think, is the only film that I have watched after listening to your podcast.
Did you dig it after?
Oh, I loved it.
Oh, that's cool. That movie rules.
It's a stone.
I think this movie's fucking cool. I think Gremlins is cool, guys.
It is cool. I've had a much better time having a conversation about it than I did even watching it.
Well,
but,
yeah.
But
see,
it's very
the thing.
Illuminating.
You got, yeah, I think you're too far inside your podcast to realize that is so often the conclusion. is that the movie is a horrible experience, then discussing the movie akin to people who go through trauma all around the world.
right, processing.
Is that you process it.
It feels good. You feel good.
You feel good that you've processed the trauma and you come away. You realize, hey, I'm alive, I'm awake, I'm aware, and I can move off into the world stronger than before.
Listeners may have that experience because so often I don't get that catharsis. So we have a conversation and then I'm still like, oh my God.
Yeah, chewing up. Well, by the way, for listeners, like our conversations do go on sometimes for weeks about movies. Like, remember that? I was thinking more about Fame. Here's this thing that happened. Two things before we draw a movie. Replug anything you want to replug, just so people have the
Twitter
end.
Handles and all Instagrams and websites.
So I'll let you do this in whatever order you want. That's one. And any feedback as one of the few people maybe who's listened to every episode.
Yeah,
of podcast,
every episode.
Any feedback, we'll take it.
Feedback.
Yeah, it's your chance. This is your chance. No. This is your chance on air to air any grievances you'd like
first
to do.
First, do the plugs. Then we'll pull one and we'll see if you have anything else to say.
Well, Kaelin doesn't want this negative
first
feedback.
First, do the plugs. Okay.
Clubbering the airwaves.
Let's see. I have.
Into the mic.
I mentioned my record label already. It's called Gnome Life Records. Gnome Life Records.
What's the website?
.com.
GnomeLifeRecords.com.
Yeah. And at Gnome_life on Instagram. And I stopped using the Twitter thing, so it's just on the Instagram.
You have your phones in your hand. Yeah, follow them on Instagram.
And I mean, it's so unrelated except for the messaging of the Chinese wizard at the end of the movie. But yeah, I also run a wilderness immersion organization called Wild Tender.
Tender.
Wild Tender, as in tending the wild, not Wild Tinder. That would be
as
a different
lighted on fire.
Lighted on fire or casual sex, but
.com?
Tender, as in to tend it, as in tenderness. WildTender.com. Yeah. So we do multi-day excursions and weekend workshops around reconnecting people to wilderness.
It
and,
sounds super rad,
and
you guys,
their ancestral roots.
And Fletcher, Fletcher spent. How long? What, did you live like a decade in Big Sur? How long did you live? You lived
7 years. Yeah.
7 years.
Yeah.
And so he Full knows time. The that's he leads groups hikes and stuff out there and elsewhere. But he knows the landscape insanely well. And so it is. I had the pleasure of visiting him in his home when he lived out there. And it was just it's the greatest thing ever to spend time in that environment with Fletcher, who knows it better than anybody I know.
Yeah. WildTender.com.
Thank you. Yeah.
And
yeah.
his wife also.
Yeah,
who's about to have a baby.
Who's about to have a baby, who's doing some of the behind the scenes work these days. And but yeah, I've been out on the trail a bunch. I spent over a month in
so cool.
sleeping out this in the wilderness just this spring. 165 miles of backpacking trips with groups.
Jesus.
And it's very beautiful.
Yep, yep.
So, you know, yeah, if you're done listening to movies or listening to podcasts about movies and you want to
Fletcher also,
spend a little time outside.
One of my favorite things is, like, my friends and I have been out visiting Fletcher or whatever, and we're going on this beautiful hike, and all we're doing is fucking talking about, like, Tarantino movies or something, and Fletcher gets pretty upset.
Yeah, I get
He's
pretty
just
angry.
Like, what's wrong with you guys?
I was going
like,
to say, download all 94 episodes of Your Favorite Movies Suck on your iPod, head out to the wilderness for a couple
and
days, listen
hang.
To them all.
And I Fletcher can fucking hang with pop culture and movies and music and everything, but when we get out there and we won't shut up
behind.
About it, he's like, come on.
Guys,
it's
so there are worlds within worlds, and they each have their own place. You know, listen to Does Your Favorite Movie Suck as you drive to the wilderness. Leave your phone out. Don't bring the earbuds. Just listen to the birds.
Download
come
it.
Come with me on a program, and we'll talk about bird language and learn all about stuff, and it'll be great. Or go
and
pick up
just,
a vinyl record.
Or
from
go
record
and just
label.
Please just raise Gremlins and see if he can resist talking about it. That'd be the best thing ever.
It may happen.
All right, Fletcher, pull a title for next week. Travis and I, maybe alone, maybe with a guest.
Who
knows?
Okay. The future is wild. I'm going to rewatch Gremlins tomorrow.
And this,
well, Gremlins 2, we never mentioned that, but that's one that would be interesting to talk about. People talk about that as sort of even more kind of unhinged.
Can't
Dante.
Wait. All
right, a lot has been said about this bag, and I will say it's much more beautiful in person than I ever imagined.
Thank you for saying that.
Okay.
Next week on Does Your Favorite Movie Suck?
Oh, Topo. What? No. gosh, it's actually pretty similar. Requiem for a Dream.
Are you serious?
Oh. Requiem for a Dream.
This is a rough 2 weeks of hellish descent.
I don't know if you get palate cleanse. What do you want to watch in between? Like,
a new batch. I want to watch Gremlins 2.
Some Gumby episodes or something.
It's a
maybe?
Fucking tight race. Which one's going to be more of an aggressive experience? Gremlins or Requiem for a Dream?
Okay. Well,
can't wait.
Tune in next week.
I got stories about when I saw Requiem for a Dream. This is going to be fun.
I can't wait. Join us next week on Does Your Favorite Movie
Suck.